In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
Legend has it that it was written by the Dark Ones, Necronomicon Ex Mortis. Roughly translated, Book of the Dead. The book served as a passageway to the evil worlds beyond. It was written long ago, when the seas ran red with blood. It was this blood that was used to ink the book. In the year 1300 AD, the book disappeared.
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smoking Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
What are we smoking on this week so the people at home can smoke along?
Right now, I've got a Flathead 660, and that's what I'll be enjoying for the duration of this week's podcast.
Yeah, the CAO Flathead is one of my new favorites. That's what we smoke a lot of around here. As you might have been able to tell from our intro theme there, this week we're talking about the man, the myth, the legend, Bruce Campbell.
Whoa.
I'm going to go ahead and get the explicit tag out of the way this week, because you cannot properly show Bruce Campbell some respect without calling him Bruce fucking Campbell.
All right. Fucking right.
Okay. So let's kick this off by talking about the movie everyone knows him for, which is not his first credit, but one of his, like, you know, first, like, big known roles, and that is The Evil Dead.
Uh-oh. What could it be? The Necronomicon? The book that I can't reference because I tend to kill
Dude,
off people?
Do not say the other N-word. We do not want to summon deadites to the nerd cave. I mean, it's bad enough in here with pit bulls and you know, smoke clouds, but no deadites. I left my boomstick at home.
That's okay. I got a boomstick upstairs, and I got the baby Glock. We're okay.
Yeah, Evil Dead 1 came out in 1981, directed by Sam Raimi, who, you know, your younger viewers might know from Spider-Man or some other big Hollywood movie.
By younger viewers, he's basically talking about me here.
Yeah, were you even born when this movie came out?
No, I was born in 85, so I'm a little bit behind the times, but you know what?
You're around for Evil Dead
when I see it, so...
I mean, you were around for Evil Dead 2, so that came out in 87. Yeah, this movie was, like, basically Sam Raimi's first, like, full-length movie. They made a bunch of short films and comedies before that, but yeah, him and Bruce and...
Was it Tim or...
Robert Tappet was the producer on these films. They decided they wanted to make a full feature length movie, and they decided to, because they'd done a lot of comedies up until then, and apparently they did a kind of a darker segment in one of their short films called It's Murder, and that kind of gave them the idea to, like, let's try to do a serious horror movie. In fact, they made a kind of like a test film to see how it would work, you know, making horror movies called, what was it called, Brad?
Let's see here. Which one?
Into the Woods.
Oh, that's right. The original before it was dubbed Evil Dead. And what? Didn't they do this on a budget of like $350,000?
Less than that. The test budget was $150,000. That was the budget for Evil Dead. The budget for the test movie was like $1,600. It was like a short film just to prove that they could make a horror movie and kind of use that to, you know, lure in investors.
That's about my podcast budget.
that's our beer budget. What are you talking about?
I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, at this point, we're almost spending as much on cigars as we are booze. In fact, I would say quite a bit more on cigars than the beer.
Hey, that's why this is the Cigar Nerd Podcast, not the Beer Nerd Podcast.
That's coming up. We haven't invented that yet, but it's in the works.
Yeah, but that original movie idea was about a bunch of college students that dug up some kind of burial ground and found the Necronomicon and summoned summon demons.
Yeah, don't go summoning demons.
Yeah, that's not good. But yeah, the once they that and you helped them actually secure the budget for the full length Evil Dead, which while they only spent $150,000, made $2.5 million in the box office.
Yeah, I mean, you can't beat that. I mean, especially coming from two friends from high school and everything else. That, I mean, dude, that's every, you know, I can remember being in high school thinking, holy crap, wouldn't it be awesome to produce my own film or something? And, you know, we run out in the woods at midnight and none of the lighting, the sound or anything works, and it turns into a horrible mishap. So,
yeah, usually we try to do this stuff. You know, people get lost in the woods and well, they pretty much did too, because like it was so low budget that the crew was living in the cabin while they were trying to shoot the movie. And like basically said it was like, you know, a 2 or 3 month torture session. Like, you know, people were accidentally stabbed, and he's like, and you know, Sam Raimi was like, hey, I got real reactions out of my actors by actually torturing them.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think it was the same thing, switching gears just a little bit, you know, the Texas Chainsaw movies.
Yeah,
you know, the ending where in the original where the chainsaw falls onto Leatherface's leg, that actually happened and wasn't supposed to. So
that stuff hurt. Even if it doesn't have a blade on it, that will hurt. I mean, I've hit myself in the head with a chainsaw chasing people, and yeah, I about knocked myself out. No one likes a knocked out chainsaw guy. It just, no bueno.
Especially with unlimited fuel.
Yeah. As apparently Ash has.
Yes. And ammo. So when you unlock the Konami code, folks, do tell. Do tell.
Yeah, the great thing about the great thing about that Evil Dead movie too was that it was like a serious horror movie. I mean, that scared the crap out of me when I was a kid.
Oh yeah. And wasn't it you know, the original NC-17 rating and everything else? I mean, at that point, you know, that was a staple for, I don't think any movies up until that point have really tried to cross that threshold.
Yeah, I mean, 70s horror movies were all about, let's see how much gore and blood we can put into it.
I mean, isn't that today's horror movie? Like, I feel like a lot of times now, you know, when I watch the original Evil Dead, and even my girlfriend, having never seen it and watching it with me over the course of the week, you know, she's sitting there, you know, her fingernails dug into my arm and everything. I think it was more, you know, a psychological thrill ride in some instances, more so than just the how bloody and gory can you make the movie.
Yeah, I mean, the they did a lot of research too during this. They apparently just went to, because this is the 70s, you know, when they were writing this, went to drive-in movies and watched a bunch of horror slasher films, and they decided that, you know, more blood is better. I mean, do it fast. You know, Raimi said, you know, you got to make it fast and furious. Once the killing happens, it doesn't stop. You just more gore and keep it going as long as you can.
No matter how over the top.
I remember the first time I watched this movie. I mean, I was with my mother and some of her friends who were not the brightest people in the world. And they let a, you know, 5-6-year-old kid watch Evil Dead. And it scared the hell out of me, especially the scenes where the camera.
I don't know, man. I still know you, and I still think there's a lot of hell there.
I mean, that's probably what warped me and turned me into like the haunted house actor that I am today, is from watching Evil Dead when I was a kid and having nightmares, especially when they have the camera that just runs through. You never see what the big nasty monster is that's chasing Bruce. It's just the camera going through the woods. And like that, like, creeped me out so bad when I was.
Well, I mean, I think that just plays on, you know, people's psychological fear. A lot of folks camping trips and everything, they venture out into the woods, and all of a sudden you start hearing a lot of sounds and seeing shadows move and things that you're not necessarily accustomed to, especially if you're in the city life or something. So,
and that's something that they used in all three of the movies, was that shaky camera through the woods thing. That final shot in the first movie where the camera comes through the cabin and all that stuff, they actually mounted the camera on a bicycle and like rode it through the house.
That's awesome.
Because like I said, they're in the middle of the backwoods Tennessee. They didn't have like a Steadicam or any of the like fancy Hollywood dollies or nothing. They're just like, let's hook this camera to a 2x4 and have two people carry it through the woods really fast.
You know what they did have?
What?
Duct tape.
Oh yeah, duct tape will fix anything. Duct tape and a chainsaw. That's all you need in an apocalypse.
Is that true? And you need to be able to run.
Boom cardio, sticks, duct tape, and chainsaws.
With unlimited fuel and ammo.
And that brings us on to Evil Dead 2.
So, question for
Dawn.
You.
Dead by Dawn.
Evil Dead 2. Sequel? Prequel? What are we working with here? A lot of debate on this one.
It's always been just like basically a remake of the first one. It's like their comedy version of the first movie. Because it's pretty much the same storyline, but with different people. Except for, you know, Ash.
I don't know. You know, Sam's directly came out and said, oh, yeah, this is definitely a sequel. But, you know, the hype around the web is, you know, is this Ash, you know, basically telling folks this badass story of how he's a king or should have been king and everything else. Yeah. And, you know, each time the story's told, it goes a little bit more over the top and he can't keep his facts straight. So,
yeah, because, I mean, my thing was if he was trying to... If this is a sequel and a different spot, why would he ever go back to that cabin? He's like, hey, all my friends died, and so did my girlfriend the last time I was here. I know, I'm going to take my new girlfriend on a date to the cabin.
Well, let me blow a hole
demons.
In your theory. What if he wakes up the following morning and he's at the cabin?
So this all could be like a weird nightmare.
Absolutely.
But that was what I most people, if you've not seen the original Evil Dead, has seen Evil Dead 2. Because, I mean, it's one of, like, the classic horror movies, and it's just that, it's one of, like, the first comedy horror movies I remember, you know, seeing. I mean, nowadays, you, like, Scream and
Scream
2.
Yeah, but, you know, even those aren't necessarily, you know, deemed what I would say, you know, comedy horror per se. I mean, you know, those are traditionally trying to go the whole slasher film route, which... A lot of times, I feel
Scream
like
the movies had a lot of like jokes, yeah, and then like the whatever the
and maybe
the
I need to refresh myself on those. You know, it has been a while since I last, you know.
Yeah, they kind of. I mean, it was a slasher movie, but it was also kind of a parody of all slasher movies. And then they came out with those stupid, Scary Movies, which was a parody of a parody, which got just retarded.
All I can remember is the breast implant landing on the ground. But
yes. Oh, that reminds me. We didn't talk about the most controversial scene in Evil Dead 1.
I bet it involves a tree.
That was the weirdest thing. And they even kind of like, you know,
hold on now.
Our lights in the studio here are flashing. We may have accidentally summoned a deadite.
I'm not sure what's going on either. We got a thunderstorm, or, you know, these are 12-year bulbs, so they've been in less than a year. I think use the N-word that I should not have used. So,
and just to specify, that's the Necronomicon, not, you know, the other N-word. Because every time Brad says that, you know, someone dies, and it's no. So he's not allowed to say it.
And unfortunately, I think it was started with Billy Mays and went Michael Jackson, and then Robin Williams. You know, I'm still trying to put the curse on Justin Bieber. Just haven't quite figured out how to get that one dialed in yet. But
yeah, your aim is crap, dude. Well, yeah, that tree scene was like the weirdest thing.
I mean, just all the little vines holding her down, and
they even kind of did it again. Not really the full rape scene, but they had a tree attack in Evil Dead 2.
Oh, yeah. No, and then you had the little tree monster doing her little striptease and all on the tree branch. Reminds me of some of our former escapades in a different lifetime.
Yeah, when the headless corpse gets up and starts doing ballet in the middle of the woods. And that leads to, like, the most hilarious part of that movie is when the head bites him in the hand and his hand goes bad.
Just to retract just a little bit. So the, you know, ballet dancing corpse, the 360 head spin. You think that's... set the, you know, stage for The Exorcism? Or The Exorcist, rather?
I don't know. I think The Exorcist came out, like, before that. It was, like, mid-70s, wasn't it?
I don't know. I mean, that, once again, that may be, you know, we'll do some horror movie research and, you know, come back and give the fine folks at home listening to the podcast some true facts, not just
that,
our own BS.
Even that things. Bad, like, stop-motion animation and, like, the claymation effects were... They still, I mean, they look kind of cheesy now, but it still looks good for that movie.
I'm a pretty, you know, avid horror film watcher, and, you know, looking at everything, yeah, I mean, you can tell some of the effects and everything are dated, but at the same time, there's a lot of raw acting on the actor's behalf, and unfortunately, I think in today's horror movies, so much of the acting has kind of died away, and the focus now is, you know, on the so-called monster, or, you know, the menace itself.
And that's another thing about, great about the Evil Dead was the, even though like our Evil Dead 2, even though it was like a, almost a straight up comedy, the horror stuff was still horrific. I mean, there was parts that you, especially like when he's fighting with his evil hand and it's like throwing stuff at him and hitting him upside the head. And it's, especially when he tries to shoot it and he like comes out and gives him the finger and then like crawls back in the hole. I mean, that's it, like, even when the head like bites him and he's like thrashing her severed head around trying to get it off his hand. It's I mean, you'll have like a hilarious scene and then you'll have this scene of him going like completely insane, like when everything in the room starts laughing at him.
Play on the you know, the constant struggle that we all face, you know, kind of the, you know, yourself being your own worst enemy. You know, are we seeing some of those tie-ins there? That's one thing that through some of my research and everything else on the films that I didn't see a whole lot of people, you know, battling. But as I'm watching the movie and everything, I'm like, man, you know, I can remember back on things in my life and struggling with my inner demons and everything. So, you know, to see that stuff come up as a reality, you know, maybe I'm a little bit far-fetched on my thinking, but.
Yeah, because that's what I love about, because like I said, we recently rewatched all these movies before we sat down to talk about them. And that's one of the things I like about Evil Dead 2 is before the other people in the story show up, when it's just him in the cabin, you just see the insanity of like what he's gone through and like the effect it's had on him, where he's like, it's like, especially when he, like I said, when he's sitting there and then all of a sudden everything in the room just starts laughing at him.
Minus some of the minor inconsistencies where at one point he's got blood on his face, but then it goes to the next scene and his face is squeaky clean. But hey, you know, I see where you're going with that.
Well, I think the room laughing at him thing was like a dream sequence, if I remember correctly.
When I dream, I'm beautiful.
When I dream, I'm a cat named Heathcliff. And this movie, too, was also a big success. You know, the budget was a little bit higher than the last one. It was like $3.6 million, but ended up making like $10.9 during the box office. And no telling how much on video, because like I said, it's one of those cult classics that has kind of gotten huge nowadays.
Yeah, just remember, good, bad, I'm the guy with the gun.
And that brings us, oh, well, speaking of which, before we get into that, the original version of Army of Darkness, I mean, not Army of Darkness, Evil Dead 2, was supposed to be Army of Darkness. He wanted to do Ash in the past, but he couldn't afford to make, like, the medieval Army of Darkness movie this time, so he did the...
I mean, is chainmail that expensive? I
guess so. We got to hire, like, guys that speak an English accent, you know. No, those way, dudes, dude, always charge a lot.
Just kidnap a blacksmith. That'll be coming up later up in a segment.
Yeah, that's why there's the whole, just that scene at the end of him getting sucked to the past, because originally he wanted like pretty much everything that was in Army of Darkness 3, or Evil Dead 3, Army of Darkness, was going to be in Evil Dead 2, and they kind of just, you know, bumped it back. Which brings us now to Army of Darkness. Or as his original title was, Medieval Dead.
Medieval Dead, that's great.
Yes, the studio wouldn't let him use that title. And even then, it was released as, because it came out, what, 92?
Yes.
Yeah, it was originally supposed to be Evil Dead 3, Army of Darkness, but they didn't think anyone had seen Evil Dead 1 or 2 since it had been so long, so they just called it Army of Darkness. And the ones of us that were in the know were like, hell yeah!
That's awesome.
Evil Dead 3.
Definitely. You know, and there was even the spinoff on Ash, you know, featured in the Marvel Zombie, you know, mini comic series.
Yeah, that character showed up in a bunch of stuff.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, great way to tie in some of the comic nerdism into the movies with Marvel Zombies versus the Army of Darkness.
Speaking of zombies, you know who did the special effects in Evil Dead 2?
Greg Nicotero?
You may know him from The Walking Dead. Yeah,
what is this dead walking you speak of?
It's about a bunch of zombies in South Georgia trying to eat rednecks.
Oh, wait, is that the ones in the city that's like 5 miles away where we decided we were going to fly two Ebola patients and
yeah,
rely on the CDC, who just accidentally sent out a couple of live samples of anthrax and said that, oh, yeah, all proper, you know,
what I was worried about was all that was going on like during Dragon Con weekend. That's the best time for there to be an outbreak. I mean, in The Walking Dead, like, you know, the zombie apocalypse starts.
You wouldn't know
in
if it's a zombie apocalypse versus, hey, are you guys just here for the show? Costumes?
No.
Oh, crap, you're chewing on my arm.
Here's how you tell the difference between zombies and Dragon Con goers. The zombies drink less. If there's rum in their hand, you're good to go. If there's a hand in their hand, it's a zombie.
What if I'm a pirate zombie? I would like to think as a pirate version of zombie, I would have rum.
The Army of Darkness, though. I mean, yeah, Army of Darkness has one of the most quotable movies that I have ever seen. I mean, you know, this is my boomstick. Like, everybody knows what you're talking about. Yeah, hail to the king. Give me some sugar, baby.
Groovy.
Yeah, groovy. Yeah, this idiot that works at the Hollywood version of Kmart, S-Mart, just happens to have a trunk full of...
Wait, hold on. You know, for our younger viewers, may not have heard of Kmart. Explain to them exactly what a Kmart is, since...
Kmart is a store that used to be like Walmart and then went out of business.
Only it had a K.
Yeah. Well, there's still some Kmarts. I actually saw a commercial for Kmart the other day. I'm like, I didn't know those even still existed.
They still do the blue light special?
Yeah, there's like an advertisement for like the Christmas layaway in September.
That's scary. We haven't even got to Halloween. Yeah, we're already skipping to Christmas. That's interesting.
Yeah, but the quotability of Army of Darkness was just, I mean, there's anytime you shout, yeah, this is my boomstick, yeah, everybody's like, yeah, freaking Ash.
Yeah, I think I can recall not even have seeing the movies and still being able to, you know, my friends that were so much more into the cult horror scene than I was at the time, still having, you know, a very good indication of what they were referring to.
I think the first time I saw Army of Darkness was a ad in a comic book when that was coming out. It was like the back cover of, I don't know, I think a Spawn comic or something. And my other favorite one where he's fighting himself and he's like, yeah, I'm good Ash, you're bad Ash. Or no, I'm bad Ash, you're good Ash. Little goody two shoes. It's a good, bad.
I'm the guy with the gun. it is good times.
And this whole trilogy has made so many spinoffs. Like, you're talking about the comic books. You know, like he's appeared in the Marvel Zombie comic books. There's even been a, which I haven't read it. I need to find it. The Ash versus Freddy versus Jason.
Well, I mean, you know, Bruce as a whole, I mean, he's got a whole repertoire behind him. I mean, you know, not only, you know, is he a cult film actor, director, producer, executive producer, a writer, an author, and a voice actor. You know, I would dare venture, he's probably one of the most interesting men in the world. And I'll take a stab at Dos Equis now.
Yeah, that's one thing I've always liked about him is the fact that he'll do these B-movie horror movies and then go do like something like a major role in something, like, you know, like you know, his
voice acting, you know, for instance, like when he did Cars 2, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatball. I mean, just stuff that people would not associate Bruce
Escape
Campbell
from L.A.
with. I mean,
what's the other big one he was? Well, he always like has a cameo in anything Sam Raimi makes. But yeah, he had his big TV show Burn Notice, you know, which, and as soon as that's over, you know, he'll go do some more B movie. I mean, he's always respected where he came from and has no problem going back and doing these kind of cheesier roles now.
Yeah,
and then.
I mean, you know, that's one thing coming up later in the show, we'll go into more detail, but I think that was one thing about My Name is Bruce that really appealed to me is it, you know, kind of portrayed him as the, oh, I'm the big Hollywood badass, you know, actor, director, and, you know, it was a side of him that truly, you know, I don't think exists. I don't think, you know, there's a role too small or too big for Bruce.
Bring it back to Evil Dead, though. Do you know there was 3 Evil Dead video games?
I did. And Bruce also did a few of the voice acting segments for the games as well, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, for a while there, you know, because everyone's always like, when are we going to see like Army of Darkness 2 or Evil Dead 4? And at first he's like, well, these video games are the sequels, you know, we're not making another movie, here's this video game. And I've played the first two. The first one was
Hail to the King, Fistful of Boomstick.
Yeah, Hail to the King was weird. He was like having nightmares about all the stuff that's happened to him. So he goes back to the cabin to face his fears, and his severed hand from Evil Dead 2 is still there, and turns on the tape recorder and unleashes the deadites again. So you end up having to fight them in the cabin, and then you go back to the, you know, Army of Darkness timeline too, and
kind of reminds me a little bit of Silent Hill almost.
Yeah.
just some of the storyline.
I know that game was like hard as hell too, because you had limited gas and limited ammo. It was kind of like a weird Resident Evil, because it was that there was a lot of exploring and backtracking, and you were having to conserve ammo and stuff.
Dude, man, the original Resident Evils, there is nothing more precious than conserving your ammo. If you're taking a shot, it better be a headshot.
And then the second one, Fistful of Boomstick, he was back in modern times, and some idiot on like a talk show starts talking about the Necronomicon. And
oh, kind of like this idiot.
Yeah, plays a recording of the translation and unleashes the deadites on the city. And this one was more just like a button pusher slash and hack game. There really wasn't as much survival horror as there was in the last one.
Yeah, and that's one genre of video games I wish would make a comeback, as the true survival horror franchises. You know, Resident Evil, they did pretty good, but you know, there's not too many others out there that, you know, have stuck around and passed the test of time.
I haven't played the last one. I mean, they haven't had a Army of Darkness game since PlayStation 2. But the Generation, or was it Regeneration?
Yeah, Regeneration.
Yeah, I never played that one, but just looking it up, it's basically like an alternate history, as if, like, after the first movie, Ash went home and they thought he was insane, so they locked him up in this like crazy, you know, nut house, and some doctor starts using the Necronomicon to try to experiment on patients and ends up unleashing zombies as always. And now Ash has to fight his way out of a nut house.
Ah, zombies. All right. Well, I think that about covers it on, you know, some of the games and stuff like that. You want to take it down with another great film? Bubba.
Before that, I think Ash has even tried a few less comedic, serious horror roles. He was in the first Maniac Cop series.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that came out in 1988. It's been a long time.
Man, I was a whole 3 years old. I can, you know, I was probably still in diapers running around or something. And my parents probably, it wouldn't have been my parents. It would have been my aunt. She's the horror queen of the house.
Yeah, it was the weirdest movie. It was about a cop who was framed for something and went to prison and was supposedly murdered in prison. But he's back and trying to get vengeance on everybody. He has really, I can understand if he went after the people that wronged him, but no, he just kills everybody. And Ash was like a fellow police officer that they originally at first think he's the killer. And then, you know, he's the one who has to save everybody, but it was more of a like serious, you know, heroic role.
Yeah. That's one I definitely need to check out. So hopefully we can find that floating around the interweb somewhere.
I just remember like one scene where like the maniac cop is driving around in a police car, and he has like body parts hanging from the cage of his patrol car of like people he's chopped. It's like, it was basically a Jason movie, but Jason was a cop instead of
a machete wielding hockey player, if you will, that died while two and, lifeguards skimped off into the woods.
Bruce did make it into the second movie briefly, but there was a big like 80s horror movie trope where if you survived the first movie, you would die soon in the second movie. They did that with like the first Friday the 13th movie. The girl who survived the first one gets killed off in like the first 15, 20 minutes of the second one. So yeah,
you got to get tired of running and fighting. I mean, I would need a chance to catch my breath, and that would probably be my weakest moment.
But, you know, as we're saying here, you know, Bruce is the king of B movies. And that brings us to the fact where he actually played the king.
Oh, who would the king be? Elvis Presley.
In a little movie we call Bubba Hotep.
Which, I don't know, you know, as far as the less serious role and everything else, I mean, dude, if I piss off, you know, some ancient pharaoh and he comes after me, it's Bubba Hotep. I wish I was the king, you know, despite having a little bump on the Peter there, you know, I mean.
Yeah, Bubba Hotep came out in 2002, and it was... Well, they never really specify whether he knows what he's talking about or if he's just delusional. But basically, the story
I think in the movies, doesn't it go into, you know, where...
Well, he has a whole...
impersonator...
Yeah, he has... Well, the whole story is Bruce Campbell is playing old Elvis. and he had got tired of being Elvis and traded places with an Elvis impersonator. So the Elvis that we know that died was really this Elvis impersonator. And then real Elvis lost his paperwork that proved that he was Elvis. So now he's this old man in an old folks home that everybody thinks is delusional and thinks he's Elvis, but he's supposed to really be Elvis.
And on that note, my brain's already frazzled.
Yeah. And his sidekick in the movie is a black gentleman who thinks he's JFK.
Yeah. Hey, what better role to play than former President JFK?
Yeah, that movie was so great. And, you know, he's, like I said, he's like at the end of his life, and then this whole, you know, this his adopted home gets invaded by the by a mummy that was stolen and lost in a river. So now this mummy comes into an old folks home and feeds on the souls of the elderly there, because, you know, people die in old folks home, you're like, they're old, that's why they died.
Speaking of which, I am seeing more of those giant German cockroaches floating around, so be on the lookout for mummies as well.
Yeah, that scarab in that movie was freaky too. And I love the fact that, you know, the part where they go to the bathroom and they find the hieroglyphics written on the bathroom wall, and he's like, he tries to translate and he's like, the first line says, in the temple of the rising sun, Cleopatra does the nasty. I was like, what does that mean? And JFK is like, well, I don't know. Dude eats some souls, comes here to take a shit, going to write stuff on the wall, just like anybody else.
I mean, I've done worse things than writing on a wall, I suppose. But yeah, that was a great movie there. Yep, sorry, lost my train of thought there, folks.
He's getting senile, man. We've got to put him in the old folks home with Elvis.
That's okay. As long as I don't get a bump on my pecker, we're all right.
Anyone that hasn't seen the movie, that's a running gag in the movie, is that Elvis may have cancer, and he has a bump on his peter. Which, like I said, when you first see him in the movie, he's like, can barely get out of bed. But like as he starts fighting monsters and becoming a hero again,
you start building up your muscle strength and get your, you know, coordination back and everything. And hey, we already know Bruce Campbell's a badass.
That's probably another, you know, theme of the movie is, you know, not giving up on life. You know, he pretty much was ready to die, and then he found a purpose to live again, which was killing a redneck mummy.
I mean, dude, that would be my purpose at the end.
I mean, that's how I want to go out one day. Dress as Elvis, fighting a mummy.
I'll put on a mullet wig then, and, you know, we can fight to the death. Chances are we'll both be on our deathbeds. Same point in time, so it'd be okay.
You could, or the old man that dressed as the like Lone Ranger in the old folks home.
Walking down the hall with this cap gun. Bap, 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 bap. Dude, ever comes down to it, I want a cap gun.
Yeah, and the fact that the mummy has to suck your life force out of your butthole too was a great great thing in that movie.
I wonder if that's where we started getting some of the ideas for Human Centipede.
Ooh,
that's a road we shall not go down.
Yeah, that's a dark journey that we.
It's a little A2M taste. Dude, yeah, we'll just stay away from that one.
So, what about the next movie on our list?
Oh, the My Name is Bruce?
Yeah.
That one. Oh, about the story of, what was it? The town of...
Yeah, this movie was released in 2008 and was actually written and directed by Bruce Campbell.
And wasn't, what was it? Goldlink, the name of the town?
I think it was Goldlick.
Goldlick, that's it. And, you know, interesting tidbit about that is all the little buildings and stuff actually on Bruce Campbell's property. The exteriors, anyway. Now, when they did the actual sound recording, you know, they did those via soundstage. But, you know, I thought it was cool how much of it was actually filmed on Bruce Campbell's property.
Yeah, he pretty much built that little town, you know, in his backyard to be able to film, you know, independent movies and stuff on. What's the, you know, story of My Name is Bruce?
Well, basically, in a nutshell, an emo goth kid unwittingly releases a vengeful Chinese god of destruction. Oh my god. And don't forget Ming Curd. So, in seconds, you know, you got bodies flying, typical blood, gore, and everything else. And Then the emo boy convinces the world we need a savior. So he sets out to go and abduct Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, I mean,
Bruce Campbell at this point is
it's Bruce playing a version of himself.
Only more egotistical and unaware of his surroundings. So the whole time, you know, Bruce thinks this is a setup by his agent. And, you know, he's like, man, this is my major movie career breakthrough here. And turns out, nope, in reality, dude, you got a Chinese guy that's pissed off and has a thing for bean curd.
Yeah, I mean, this as this town's looking for somebody to save him, the one, you know, nerd kid in town was like had watched all of Bruce's movies. And like I say, he's playing a washed up B-movie actor who just happens to be named Bruce Campbell.
And how about the fact, the scene where it shows the kid's room and he's got all of the Bruce Campbell
yes, like everything.
Memorabilia and everything. And I thought he was an actual collector of Bruce Campbell memorabilia.
That's probably all stuff that Bruce has of himself.
Except for the wax statue.
Yeah. But I do like that the movie within the movie that he's supposedly famous for, Cave Alien 1 and 2. That is like this, oh, they show some clips from it in the movie, and it is this horribly cheesy sci-fi movie with weird aliens and slime and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of going back to, you know, the cheesiness, you know, one of the running themes of My Name is Bruce is the wacky, you know, freaking Looney Tunes sound effects, you know, where you got the Acme Amble to the head sounds and everything. And then you got Ted Raimi, who actually appears as three different characters in the movie.
Ted Raimi.
Yeah. Dude, beer's kicking in. We're doing things right. Oh, yeah. We're recording.
Yeah, like, yeah, Ted played manager or agent or whatever in the movie. And Ted's pretty much been around in all of, you know, Bruce's movies. He actually played the mother in Evil Dead 2, the one that was in the basement. That was Ted in like a lot of makeup.
Well, I mean, you know, one of the kind of going along, you know, some of the different run-ons and things, you know, one of the townspeople named Frank actually makes a reference to kidnapping a blacksmith, you know, from the Army of Darkness. And the actor is Timothy Patrick Quill. And he actually played both Frank and the blacksmith from Army of Darkness, which I thought was cool. So I love how they, you know, kind of make references to each of the individual movies. And, you know, even though it's something completely different, you know, they still continue to kind of go back to the roots.
Yeah. And My Name is Bruce didn't get a huge theatrical release, but it has been in theaters some. I read that, are you familiar with the Alamo Draft House out in Texas? It's like art house theater that plays a lot of stuff. Like, they actually have the record for the quickest sellout of a movie when this played at the Alamo Draft House. 2 minutes it took to sell out the theater for My Name is Bruce.
Do we know how many seats that theater houses? I mean, would it be a couple of thousand or, you know?
No, I think it's like a small, like, one or two screen theater. It's not that big, I mean, but it's like a bar, nightclub type deal. I want to go there. I hear it's great. But yeah, the previous record holder was another Bruce Campbell appearance.
That's awesome. I mean, you can go back and yeah, one of the other things that, you know, kind of stood out is it's never quite implied. However, there are some references at one point or another to movies such as Brokeback Mountain, which I thought was, you know, completely, like, uncalled for. And then I started digging into it, and I'm like, hell, that's just funny.
Yeah, and then there's all kind of references to old Bruce Campbell films, too. I mean, I think when he goes to get guns, when he still thinks it's a movie and not a demon, Chinese demon, you know, he asks for a boomstick and some chainsaws and whatever else.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, all in all, I got to say that My Name is Bruce was a, you know, funny, geeky horror movie that, I mean, even my girlfriend, who is not real big into the whole geek or cult horror scene, you know, even she found some enjoyment in it. So, you know, the fact that we can partake in things like this together and, you know, I can read a bit more into it, or, you know, a lot of times have to explain all of the inside jokes, which in turn says, all right, guess what? We're doing an Evil Dead trilogy weekend, so enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, she even got scared at the original Evil Dead.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I still got the claw marks on my arms to show for it, which was from the movie, not from other partakings.
Now, speaking of scary, they even had the remake Evil Dead a couple years ago.
Yeah, we'll not go into that one just for the sheer fact that I think she watched that entire movie with, reading between the lines. Actually, I don't even know that she watched it, because all I remember is her hand covering her face the entire time, and she would say, is it over yet?
Yeah, I loved the remake. When they said they were going to remake Evil Dead, I was like, I was kind of scared, but it was actually a good movie. I mean, they stayed away from the CGI. They kept it like, practical effects, and it was just as scary, if not scarier, than the original. Especially when that one part where the girl's like breaks the mirror and is like cutting herself with the glass. Yes. That creeped me out so bad.
There were a couple of scenes like that just made you kind of take a step back. And I mean, I'll reference it again. That almost has the same effect as I can remember the first time I watched, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They pick up the mad hitchhiker and the dude takes, the freaking razor blade and slices his palm open and stuff.
Or even the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where the girl pulls out the gun and shoots herself in the head in the back of the van. I mean, that was some just creepy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so I like the fact that the movie, still stood true and was like, all right, we're going to push the envelope a little bit, and we're going to make some folks cringe.
Yeah, I still don't know if we're going to get a sequel or not. There's been so many rumors with that.
I don't know, man. At the end of the day, what I take away from it is you got two lifelong friends, and I mean, I think it's the same with us, right? We sit around, how many BS ideas do we toss back and forth, and holy shit, look at us. We're actually filming a podcast.
Well, like the original, when that first movie came out, the guy who wrote and directed the remake was like, this is not a remake, it is a sequel. This stuff happened later on, like after the stuff that happened to Bruce. And in fact, you see his old Oldsmobile out front rusting when they get to the cabin. His idea was like, this is the original cabin. All that stuff that happened to Bruce just happened earlier. This just happens to be another, Necronomicon screw up at the cabin.
There it is again, the other N-word.
It's all right if I say it. You just can't say it.
Okay, well then I'll refrain from saying it.
And, since then, him, Sam, and Bruce have said, yeah, we're doing three more movies. We're doing a sequel to That Evil Dead, and we're doing Army of Darkness 2. And then we're going to do a third movie that combines the storylines and Mia meets Ash. But since then, everyone who has said that is going to happen is like, oh, no, this is internet bullshit. People talk a lot of crap, including us. But now, like at the, last Comic-Con a couple months ago, they said that now they're going to do a Evil Dead TV show that Bruce is going to be in. So, who knows? We may get to see Ash again eventually, one way or another.
I mean, I definitely don't think we've seen the last of Ash. And, I don't think we've seen the last of, any of Sam's work either. So, I don't know. I don't know what the future holds. I'll just know that I'm going to be anticipating.
Maybe Ash can show up in the next Avengers movie. He is in the Marvel universe anyway, so.
Yeah. I mean, hey, there we go.
Rocket Raccoon with Ash and Groot as his sidekicks. That's a movie I want to see.
Dude, I think we're on to something.
I am Groot. This is my boomstick.
I'll get you to Hollywood ASAP.
Exactly. But Bruce is not only known for his awesome movie roles, the guy's done a lot of good TV shows too throughout the years.
Yeah.
One of my favorite is Briscoe County Jr. from 1993.
Yeah, that one's all on you, my friend, because, I have not seen that yet. I read a little bit of the synopsis and stuff, and it's piqued my interest, but I did not get a chance to partake before we did the recording, so yeah, I feel like I'm missing out. I
recently got a copy of it, but I haven't had a chance to rewatch it again. But, it's got a lot of steampunk elements to it, too, because, I mean, it happens in 1893, it just happens
I mean, you saw that, kind of in Army of Darkness. That was one of the things that, my girlfriend pinpointed was, when they open the trunk of, Ash's car, and there it is, steampunk book, chemistry book, and what do you get? You get a steam-powered...
Yeah, I think it was steam power, not steampunk. Because he builds, turns his car into a steam engine in the 1300s. But yeah,
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, Briscoe County Jr. is about a Harvard-educated lawyer whose dad happens to be a U.S. Marshal who is killed by a gang. So he becomes a bounty hunter and is hired by a guy to hunt down the gang that murdered his father. And there, like I said, there's a lot of like weird, you know, like I said, it, steampunk, you know, things that come up in the movie where there's a lot of, scientist in the movie TV show that's the same actor who played Gomez in the original Adams Family, and he's always kind of coming up with these weird inventions that are way more futuristic than they should be. Like I think he has like a motorcycle and a diving suit, and at some point the guy builds a Zeppelin.
I feel like I'm really missing out. I don't even have a Zeppelin.
Yeah, everyone needs a Zeppelin,
at least one.
A Led Zeppelin,
dude. I play guitar. I could be like Led Zeppelin.
No, yeah, okay. But it was like a whole comedy about, you know, the West with all these weird sci-fi supernatural type elements. They're always chasing after this mysterious orb thing that no one really knew what it was, but that's what the gang was after that he was trying to stop. And he had a sidekick that was another competing bounty hunter named Lord Bowler, who was like this just total badass dude, but turns out he was really like a really rich guy that you find out later on in the series. Like when he's not like this gruff cowboy, he's like, you know, sipping tea and living in a big mansion.
Yeah, I need to be sipping tea and living in mansions. Yeah, I mean, you know, so we kind of established, you know, that Bruce got a very extensive career. Unfortunately, I have not read his books, but, you know, I do want to give him props.
Yeah.
As
yeah, I've heard he's his books are pretty good. I've not had a chance to read.
You know,
to
the book,
any.
If Chains Could Kill, The Confessions of a B-Movie Actor, actually went on to be a New York Times bestseller. And then, you know, also another book that I want to check out is Make Love, The Bruce Campbell Way.
That sounds interesting.
Yes.
Give me some sugar, baby. Yeah, Briscoe County only lasted one season, but like I said, it was a good show. He had a lot of he was also on the old Xena Hercules you know, Kevin Sorbo series as what was his name? Like Atreus or something.
Yeah.
But he was like the king of thieves.
Yep.
And he was like a total like, you know, asshole pretty much. He was always showing up and getting everybody into trouble, but his character was hilarious.
Yeah, that's one, you know, I need to go back and watch some of those movies again, you know, especially now that I've done some of the research and knowing what I know and, you know, some of the cameos and different actors' roles to look out for. You know, that to me just kind of changes the whole dynamic of a film. So.
Yeah, there's more, you know, recent role is like, you know, actually a big hit was Burn Notice as Sam Axe.
Yes.
Yeah, Burn Notice was great. He was about a spy who gets framed and basically, you know, erase his identity and drop him in Miami. So now he kind of becomes a private detective vigilante and kind of helps people in Miami. And the only person that will, you know, have his back is this washed up Navy SEAL that he knew back in the day, which is played by Bruce Campbell. And he's kind of like this drunken, womanizing, you know, a-hole. But, I mean,
he's not Bruce at all.
I mean, he spends most of his time wearing Hawaiian t-shirts and gold chains, which I do have one of the shirts he wore, like the same shirt. So I need to dress up as Sam Axe for next Dragon Con.
I probably have a gold chain you can borrow.
I think I have the same gold chain he wears in the show. Because I think it lasted six seasons. And I recently watched from the beginning, and I saw like one episode. I'm like, wait a minute, I have that shirt.
Did it come from Kmart?
No, I got it at S-Mart, Shop Smart, Shop S-Mart. And even the Burn Notice got a spinoff movie that showed like the origins of Sam Axe about how he, you know, ended up getting washed out of the military and ended up in Miami, where he was basically got in trouble for sleeping with an admiral's daughter or no, it was a wife. He ended up hooking up with the general's wife. So they sent him to some South American hole in the wall to train guerrilla fighters.
Yeah, that'll get you every time.
Yeah, but it was definitely not as serious as Burn Notice. It was more of the cheesy Bruce Campbell version of an action movie, but it was quite good. I think it's on Netflix now too. You should definitely check it out.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look for that then on Netflix or, you know, Hulu Plus or Amazon Prime, any other video outlets that I Starepaste $7.99 a month for.
Yeah.
So they need to sponsor the show, so we can get like $200 a month. So, I mean, I think, what do you think, Joe? That about wraps us up on the main segment here?
Yeah, or? I think that's all we can say about Mr. Bruce Campbell, you know, god of the B-movies.
Yep, and like I said earlier, most interesting man of the world. And, you know, I think on that note, we just need to end it. You know, Hell Hydra. I mean, wait, that's a completely different segment. No,
we did that last week. But right here, we're going to wrap up and throw to our Beer 30 segment. Be back in a little bit.
Hell to the king, baby.
For that arrogance, I shall see you dead. Yeah. All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up. See this? This is my boomstick! It's a 12-gauge double-barreled Remington. S-Mart's top of the line. You can find this in the sporting goods department. That's right, this sweet baby was made in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Retails for about $109.95. It's got a walnut stock, cobalt blue steel, and a hair trigger. That's right, shop smart. Shop S-Mart. You got that? Now I swear, the next one of you primates even touches me. Let's talk about how I get back home.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And we're back with another Beer 30 segment. We're back at Sweetwater Brewing. Today's sample is the Happy Ending 2013 edition.
Might I add, all-time favorite brew from Sweetwater. I don't care what year it is, you cannot go wrong with this brew.
Yeah, the Happy Ending is part of their catch and release seasonal. They release certain special beers throughout the year. The Happy Ending is usually available from December to March, April, depending on the supply. So, yeah, something to look. You can find them here and there right now, but something to definitely look for. You know, closer to the end of the year. Stock up on them while you can, because this is a phenomenal beer and you'll be mad that you can't drink it for the other 8 months out of the year.
Yeah, once again, you know, folks, keep in mind that, you know, this is one of those beers. Let this thing come up to temperature. You know, what I found is usually 54, 55 degrees is about prime, and if you got a chalice on hand, you're going to be rocking and rolling. As with most of your stouts, give this one a little bit of a heftier pour. You know, some of the bars I've been into and things, and, you know, the bartenders are under the unfortunate mind frame that everything requires a 45-degree pour. But, you know, some of your imperial stouts and these heavier beers, you know, if you're looking for that good lace and head, then, you know, don't be afraid to give those a little harder pour.
Dude, I want you talking about hard and head. Like,
hey, man, you know, I mean, just
yeah.
saying
stuff is gets, yeah.
I'm not gonna argue with some hard head.
Yeah, after a couple beer segments, stuff get weird, and you know, I no bueno.
No bueno.
So for our
friend.
For listeners that aren't familiar with glassware, what is a chalice or a goblet?
I mean, you know, looking at it, it's going to be a steeper, deeper glass. You know, some folks may look at it and try to compare it to a wine glass, but you know, typically
it's going to be a short, wide mouthed glass, usually with like some kind of stem.
Yeah, what we'll do for you folks is, you know, we'll upload some videos or some pictures up on our website, post to Twitter, and, you know, let you see exactly, you know, what we're referring to as the glassware. You know, some of it you can find if you've got, you know, growler shops or, you know,
your high-end retail stores a lot of times will have specific glassware.
And that's another great way to, you know, if you're stocking up your glassware collection is, you know, a lot of these bars will have a pint night where they'll give away glasses with whatever beer. And a lot of your growler shops or your craft beer stores will have, you know, you buy a certain beer, you may be able to get a special glass with that beer. Like most of my collection is like all has weird labels because I've picked them up at beer samplings. Yeah, and
you know,
whatnot.
One thing, you know, too, to keep in mind is as craft beer scene keeps exploding the way it has been, some of your festivals, you know, not only the sampler glasses that you get, but, you know, when you're going around to, you know, the different, you know, stations and tents and displays that are set up, don't be afraid to ask, you know, some of the brewmasters, hey, what temperature should the beer be served at and what type of glassware do you recommend? I mean, you know, there's some things out there that, you know, I would tell you folks to check out a snifter or, you know, sometimes the traditional Pilsner style glass. You know, it just, you would be amazed at how the glassware can change the taste of your beer.
You know what kind of glass I really prefer?
What's that?
One that has beer in it.
I would always prefer to see my life as a glass half full versus a glass half empty, and beer is no exception.
And the happy ending is an imperial stout, which is basically, it's a stout like any other stout, but with imperial, it's going to have a higher alcohol content.
So what are we looking at on this one?
This one's going to be a 9%, so it's a little bit less than the dank tank we had last time. Sweetwater's description of this is a full-bellied bruiser sporting a huge dry-hopped stiffy, resulting in a explosive finish.
And, you know, on that note, don't be afraid of the word hops. As I stated previously in some of our former segments, I am not an IPA fan. I am not a hophead by definition. This beer here, it is a little hoppier than the Gimp that you heard us, the Dank Tank from Sweetwater we did before. But this one here does have a little bit of that hoppier taste. And as you'll note, you know, throughout the course of your drinking, as the beer warms up, the coffee overtones. Hey, listen here, man. People want to know about beer. I'm going to tell them about beer. You fall asleep, all right?
I'll just be taking a nap. And
you know,
I
got a hipster beard, and, you know, I just haven't migrated to the skinny jeans because some guys just weren't meant to wear skinny jeans. I'll leave that to the ladies.
Yeah, you don't want to wear skinny jeans. You got to always leave room for the cojones. Especially if you're a real man, you have.
All right, so Joe, tell us, what do you like about Head?
Well, that's probably for another podcast. And this is a very dark beer. I mean, it's like, looks like, has the consistency of old motor oil. It is like just black as black can be, but it is a good beer.
Absolutely delicious. And, you know, this time, folks, here it's all about the beer. We don't have any, you know, cigars or anything in hand at the moment. So, you know, we're giving you the description and talking about the lace on the glass and everything else. I mean, it's an all-around good beer. If you want to, you know, break out something that, you know, I've had friends that all they wanted was a Budweiser or a PBR, and, you know, I've been able to introduce them to, you know, some of the happy endings and some of the other craft brews, and, you know, you definitely find some gems in the mix.
And a professional drinking tip, when you get these happy endings, they usually come with a wax-coated... they dip the bottle in wax.
Yeah, don't be a dumbass and try to pry that shit off with a knife because...
Also, make sure when it comes out of the fridge, the wax is going to be brittle. So when you try to peel it off, it's just going to come off in like little bitty chunks and leave a huge mess on your bar top. Make sure you like, you know, heat the tip under like, you know, warm water for a few minutes to warm up the wax. Then you can just kind of, you know, peel it off. But yeah. Trying to do it when it's cold is not easy. It just kind of falls apart.
Or just man up and grab the chainsaw or some power tools. And
I mean, I have opened a bottle with a sword before, but I don't know how champagne sabering would equate to beer opening. That's maybe an experiment we'll try later on.
Yeah, we'll just have to break out some of the broadswords and things we got laying around. And, you know, we'll make sure that we get some video for that one for you folks.
Yeah, safety tip, do not try this at home. I do not suggest opening beer bottles with a sword.
I absolutely suggest that in my not-so-professional opinion. One requirement is you must send us video, and no, you will not get any perks or props. This isn't going to be the next Jackass or anything, but we'll probably just laugh hysterically at you.
Yep.
That's how we get down. As cigar nerds, there's a certain passage that we get. We are also assholes. But we're the best kind of asshole. We're the asshole that you'd like to have a beer with.
And we're back. Time for some science. Are you ready to drop some science, Brad?
I don't know about dropping the science, but I'm definitely willing to get myself educated, sir.
All right. Back in 1906.
I wasn't even conceived yet.
We're going to some Doctor Who stuff right here. The HMS Dreadnought.
You're not going to tell me you're bigger on the inside, are you?
No, only on Thursdays. Yeah, the HMS Dreadnought was the first, like, big warship of its kind, like the most guns, heavily armored. And since then, every big, heavily armored battleship has been referred to as a dreadnought. So when scientists discovered the largest dinosaur ever, guess what they named it? Dreadnoughtus.
Whoa, I think the mic clipped.
That deserved a mic clip and like a thunder, epic thunderclap.
We'll work out into the final mix.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Dreadnoughtus has just been discovered in Patagonia, Argentina, which is apparently where you go to find dinosaur bones.
I'm going there because apparently you find big-ass dinosaur bones.
Oh, yeah. This thing is freaking huge. And it's also like one of the most complete skeletons that has been found of what they call a Titanosaur, which is like the big dinosaurs.
So that classify like the T-Rex and some of the long necks.
No,
and stuff,
the T-Rex are like freaking midget dinosaurs compared to this guy.
Maybe compared to them, but I mean compared to Velociraptor or something. I mean,
dude, the T-Rex is like the size of this guy's foot.
All right, then fine. Then how about an Allosaurus? Then, jeez.
Okay, we're getting there.
I mean, don't make me go paleontologist on you. I'm not even scared.
Yeah, Dr. Kenneth.
I've seen Jurassic Park.
Dr. Kenneth Lukava of Drexel University is the one who found this creature, and it was like a 50% complete skeleton. This thing is 85 feet long and 35 feet tall and weighs 65 tons.
So chances are it's not going over any bridges here in Atlanta anytime soon.
No. I mean, this thing is bigger than a 737 jet plus a basketball field.
I mean, just basketball field. Dude, come on. I thought it was a court.
Yeah, the previous largest dinosaur was the Futalanganakosaur, which I cannot pronounce, but it was only 45 tons. I mean, we're starting to get into like...
I mean, dude, you're a big guy, but I mean, I don't think you can justify saying only 45 tons.
Only 45 tons, man. I mean, when you're talking with versus a 65-ton beast... Yeah, 45 tons is kind of small.
I mean, anytime you get above 20, 30 tons or something, I mean, you got some weight behind you.
Yeah, the femur of this dinosaur is 6 feet tall, and that's just like the upper leg bone. So this was a big bastard.
I'm going to need a bigger grill.
Yeah. They had, was it the tail on this version is like 30 foot long. And I mean, this was a huge dinosaur.
Well, I mean, Arabella's got a pretty short tail, being a pit bull and all, but you know, she'll still beat the hell out of you with it.
Yeah, but she would be like a toothpick for the. You know, luckily, this thing was a vegetarian, from what they say, one of the big plant eaters. But yeah, it could have stepped on a T-Rex.
Or I heard of T-Rexes even.
And so far, they're not really sure of. There wasn't like, you know, teeth marks or anything on the bone, so they don't think it was like killed by something bigger. So, you know, these things pretty much, yeah, died out for some other reason,
be it the asteroid or ecological change or the ice age. I mean,
yeah, probably. I mean, but you know, say there is a predator big enough to take this thing down, I mean, we are getting into Godzilla territory,
dude. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't know that Godzilla has it in to take this thing down. I mean,
Godzilla
is
like,
really badass and all, but
yeah, he's not that big, I don't think.
I mean, I've seen, you know, Megalosaurus and Megalodon and you know, King Kong give Godzilla a run for his money, and you know, I'm sorry, unless he goes into some hardcore training programs and steps his game up, You know, I mean, who knows? Maybe the dinosaur's true weakness is fire, and Godzilla then would have the upper hand.
But yeah, because that nuclear breath will, you know, as we saw in the latest Godzilla movie, will take down a big monster.
I mean, there's nothing like watching Godzilla snowball another monster. I mean,
Godzilla! Yeah, that, I mean, Godzilla could probably, like, make
I mean, you can probably get a flank stake or something
saddle
off of that.
Yeah, throw a saddle on the back of a Dreadnoughtosaur, and we have like the first cowboy Godzilla movie where he's just riding Dreadnoughtosaur like a big horse.
Dude, I don't think I can train one. I think it exceeds my character level right now. No. I'm going to have to go up a few skill points in my prehistoric RPG-dom.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Godzilla.
I like where you went with that. I don't even have to edit that one.
Oh, yeah. See, smart. We do have some more science. Are you ready for some more science?
I'm always ready for some more science, man. What kind of knowledge are you dropping on me this time?
Scientists.
Hold on, wait a second. I bet I can read your brain.
Exactly. Scientists have seen the first brain-to-brain communication.
Hold on. We're not scientists, but what are we thinking? I'm thinking beer and cigars.
I'm talking some straight Spock mind-meld from your brain to mine message.
Dude, I don't want to know what's going through your brain right now.
Dude, yeah, it's pretty bad.
I mean, you've had a couple of beers now, and I've offered you a complimentary cigar, and I don't know about you, man, but I'm just glad we're not recording on Thursdays.
Dr. Alvaro Pascal Leon, a neurologist at Beth Israel Hospital in Boston, is the leader of this study. He sent a message from a guy in India to three people in France and actually transmitted the message back to the original sender, like all the, just from the mind and a little bit of electronics.
I did that using my mobile phone via text message.
Well, this is like, you know, brain text messages, and it pretty much works about the same.
So how many transponders and everything do they have to inject into the individuals?
Nothing really. The sender was hooked up to a electrocephalogram, which reads the...
Oh, yeah, dude. I got one of those sitting in the basement right here. I mean...
What that does, it reads like the electrical impulses of your brain. And they fed that signal into a computer, which converted it to, you know, binary code and
so
emailed it.
Basically, they are hacking the human brain.
Yeah. Like I said, it took that, you know, signal that
Spooky.
It took the signal that computer read, turned it into binary, and then emailed it to the receiver. On the receiver's end, the computer converted that signal back to, you know, electrical signals and was transmitted to the receiver using a transcranial magnetic stimulator that basically, you know, sends light flashes into the other person's brain that they could decode and understand the original message sent, which was hola. So, I don't know, they had a Spanish speaker in India talking to a French man.
I mean,
saying, hola.
I didn't realize Spanish was that common in India, but, you know, once again, I've never been to India, so...
A doctor from Boston went to India to send a Spanish message to France. Gets all sorts of confusing.
I mean, I would say global popularization. I mean, word travels. I mean, why should we be so simplistic?
And the message sent from France back to India was, ciao.
Yeah, I can agree with ciao. I mean,
or however you pronounce that, you know, it's basically goodbye. He said hello, they said goodbye, so they didn't want to talk to the Spanish guy in India.
I mean, why not? Maybe he was an interesting guy. I mean, who are we to judge, and who are they to judge? I mean, come on, you're out there making global steps and, you know, leading edge technology and something that hasn't been done before, and you don't even want to have a full-on conversation? I mean, dude, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing the whole way, and I'm a little bit disappointed that they didn't have a full-on conversation.
I mean, this is just the first step, but it has huge, you know, implications. I mean, if we don't have to make a phone call anymore, that we could just straight beam, you know, beam our message to other, or even like remote viewing, like, you know, someone in, say, a spy in another country could, you know, beam.
Yeah, I mean, that's scary,
what he's
dude.
Seeing
you
to
have
a commander
that
back,
are looking
back home.
To dictate every facet of human life. Dude, I just see this as maybe I'm overly paranoid here or something, but man, this just
you
looks
are.
Yeah, like
quit hanging
go.
Out in this basement smoking cigars. And
I mean, dude, I mean, I keep a roll of tinfoil here for a reason, okay?
Well, there was another earlier experiment from a group at, I think, Washington University.
Yeah, see, right there, politician headquarters. Man, I'm on to something.
Not D.C., like Washington State. But this person actually...
I mean, specify, man. I mean, come on. You've got to give people their facts.
Sent the impulse to a another colleague, so I forgot where the receiver was, but used it to control the person's hand, and yeah, was able to control like the movements of this other person. I mean, that would be... Like, say, you know, you've got a surgeon and, you know, a specialist in, you know, the here in Atlanta, and needs to do an operation in...
Well, I mean, they've been kind of doing England. Some of that technology with robotics and everything. I mean, you know, the local hospital here in Forsyth, you know, that's one of the big things that they advertise is, you know, their neuroscience department having the robot, you know, technologies where they can get, you know, some of the state-of-the-art surgeons, regardless of where they are in the world, to basically play a video game. But, you know, the outcome is really either life or death.
Yeah, but with this technology, they wouldn't even have to use the remote controls. If they could, you know, operate the robots just with their brain. I mean, it's different from, you know, say a surgeon having to use a remote control to control a, you know, robot hand somewhere, or just being able to think it and operate as he would normally.
I mean, have
normally.
We not learned our lesson with Doc Ock or anything? I mean, geez, there's enough Marvel movies and everything else with robot, you know, villains that at some point we don't need to unleash, you know, the Terminator on ourselves. I mean, it's all bad, you know, preferably I prefer my clothes, boots and motorcycle and everything, but
with this technology, we could be Skynet. Instead of like letting the robot control the robots, we could control the robots.
Dude, I just see this as, I mean, here we go. We're going to have freaking Michael Bay do a full action film on this or something. I see it here.
I mean, this is one step, you know, closer to me being able to download my brain into a robot body. I mean, yeah, I could have me like a sexy metallic six-pack, yeah.
Yeah, because the other robots definitely are going to want to dig a sexy metallic six-pack body.
Exactly, dude. Yeah, I don't want to be like...
I got a six-pack. It's just upstairs in the fridge.
I mean, do you ever remember the movie Ghost in the Shell?
Absolutely.
I mean, this could be the next gen version of Ghost in the Shell. You know, we could all be android cops in the future.
I'm sorry, I would prefer to be an alchemist. I mean, just let me have my medals and, you know, everything else. And
wrong, you know, anime, dude.
Hey, you know what? You threw anime out there. I'm just saying.
I did hear they're fixing to make a live action version of Ghost in the Shell. Kind of on topic, off topic.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think that's how our life goes.
Yeah, we get distracted easily here in the Nerd Cave. But yeah, that, I mean...
What are you trying to say? All the smoke's going to your head or something? I mean...
No, it's the like lack of oxygen from all the smoke.
I mean, we can't turn the fan on right now, because then it gets picked up in recording, and it's going to hurt people's ears, and it's all bad. So, you're just going to have to deal with it, Joe.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, well, this could also be like... you know, Professor X and his, you know, the real version of his, what the hell is that called? The computer room he goes into and puts on the little helmet, and he can, like, talk to all mutants through.
Yeah.
Cerebro. Yeah, Cerebro. Yeah. I mean, this is pretty much the, you know, first
I mean,
real
I see where
version
you're going
of the
with
Cerebro
that,
computer.
But, you know, that also... You know, once again, relies so much on human nature and the programming, and unfortunately, you know, I'm going to get a little bit political here, but that's the reason that the true version of communism will never work, because there's always going to be somebody out there that's communism. Going to, you know, well, communism by the root basically states that you do good for all society and everybody has equal share, but human nature, it is survival of the fittest, and you're always going to have somebody that desires more power and more control and wants to be the leader.
Well, so far with this technology, I mean, you have to be... We both had to be plugged into the system to be able to communicate.
Yeah,
it's not to the point where
we don't go for a, you know, oh, look at there, we come out with the Ebola, you know, vaccine, but instead we're getting, you know, millions of little microbes injected into us that are just little robots, and, you know, ultimately we become the host of those little robots, and while all you're like, man, I'm not going to die of Ebola, but somebody can just seriously life hack me, and
I'm going to make you punch yourself in the face when we get to life hacking nanobots. Like, why are you hitting yourself, Brad? Why are you hitting yourself?
That's okay.
But I mean, at this
point, I've got far worse ideas in my head.
We, you know, everyone who wants to use this has to be plugged into the network together. But yeah, if we get to the point where, like Professor X, where you can jack into somebody's mind who's not, you know, a willing participant, then, you know, bad stuff could happen.
Yeah, I'm all about, you know, bad stuff not happening per se, but, you know, hey, whatever. You know, it's cool. I like, you know, all the new technologies and stuff, but, you know, at the same time, you know, I kind of miss the more simple days. But, you know, who knows? We'll see where the future takes us and, you know, how humans prevail. And, you know, maybe there's some groundbreaking, you know, ideas and, you know, things that come out of this. So
I'll say, if someone has to be our evil robot overlord, it might as well be me.
I mean...
And on that note, that brings us to the end of our science segment. We'll be right back with the nerd news.
Stay tuned, folks.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in nerd news.
All right. Welcome back, folks. Brad Jackson here. So, you know, Joe, he had the opportunity to attend Dragon Con here in Atlanta that just wrapped up. So I figured we'd take this time and interview him, talk about some of the debauchery and cool things going on at Dragon Con this year.
Yeah, I don't know when you're listening to this, but we're recording just the week after Dragon Con. And I think a week later, I finally recovered from the debauchery of Dragon Con.
I don't know, man. You're still looking a little bit rough.
That's because I haven't slept.
Well, I mean, weeks. Dude, I need you to get on a normal sleeping pattern, okay?
No way. I'm living on Monster and, like, you know, other forms of caffeine.
And booze and cigars. We're doing pretty good for ourselves.
True.
We promote healthy living here on the Cigar Nerds podcast.
Yeah, so I said I go to Dragon Con almost every year, but Brad here hasn't been. And when was the last Dragon Con you went to?
Man, I would have to say probably my sophomore year of high school. So it has been, oh my gosh, 12 years now? 13 years? Golly, holy crap. Where is the time
yeah,
gone?
Yeah, things have probably changed a lot since the last time you were there.
Well, of course they have. You know, the last time I was there, I was having to sneak around to get, you know, dragon booze and everything else. And, you know, now I could actually, you know, do it and brandish an ID and not have to worry about somebody hassling me because I look like I'm 15.
Yeah, Dragon Con was excellent this year. It's definitely gotten a lot more crowded since the last year we were there. I think there was like 60 or 70,000 was the final number of the attendees, and it's now over 5 hotels and then a convention center that has the dealer's room and everything else in it. So it has definitely grown up in the intern years.
So tell me, what was some of the most interesting things as far as the dealer's room and things that people were offering that really captivated your attention?
The dealer's room is like it, dude, if I ever won the lottery before Dragon Con, it's going to be a very expensive weekend because they have, no matter what you want, the one thing I saw in there that I really wish I could have got, the Star Wars Black Edition, like the super detailed action figures, they actually had a Jabba the Hutt to go with my steampunk Jabba.
Yeah, and for you guys, you know, Joe just hinted on it right there, but, you know, if you didn't know, be sure you like Steampunk Jabba on Facebook, as that is our yours truly, Joe Harris.
Yeah, we did, our Star Wars group went to the Vintage Vogue fashion show, which was a joint effort with the, that's one thing about Dragon Con, there's a whole bunch of different tracks, like so pretty much anything you want to know about, there's a different track of programming for that. And the Vintage Vogue was a joint effort between the our alternate history track, which is run by Mr. Q of Ratchet Retrocast, and the costuming group. So there was a huge steampunk-related fashion show. And the Star Wars group was we closed the show. So, yeah, Jabba got to go up on stage and just act like a pimp, which is the best part of being a Jabba, is it gives me license to say whatever I want and get away with it because it's Jabba, you know, he's supposed to be a drunken asshole.
Yeah, and just so you folks know, we do promote drunken assholes here on the Cigar Nerd podcast. So, you know, if that's you, hey, give us a listen. And, you know, I've got 29 years of experience of being an asshole.
Yeah, that was probably one of the highlights of the weekend was the fashion show. And then I went out later as a Party Jabba, which is, you know, basically same thing, but just a kilt. And I went to the,
Let me stop you right there, Joe. So, dare we ask, what's below the kilt?
A bottle of rum. That was the weirdest thing. I bought a UT kilt, utility kilt, and there is a like secret pocket under the front flap, which I discovered will fit a full fifth of rum. So as I was roaming around the convention and meeting cool people, I would say, hey, you want to see a magic trick? And then pull this rum out from under my kilt. And I'm surprised at the number of the people that was willing to drink something I had pulled out of my crotch.
I mean, you're crotch not a bad-looking guy, around. Joe. I mean, there we go, crotch shots. I mean, you just need to put a sign, you know, for Jabba that says, you know, crotch shots, arrow below.
I'm afraid somebody will try to kick me, though. But yeah, I also went to our friends Calamity Labs and some other mixologists did a panel called Cogs and Cocktails, where they talked about some of their favorite drinking recipes.
I heard there was a little bit of a mishap going on during that panel.
Yeah, someone was dumb enough to say that only amateurs are mixologists, to which Calamity definitely shut them down and made him look like a fool. He eventually left, like, you know, left the room because everyone was like making fun of him. I threatened to freeze him in carbonite, so he may be like hanging on the wall in the Weston bathroom.
That's okay, though. You know, anybody out there that, you know, gives a damn, you might want to go looking for him if you're missing somebody.
And also went to the roast of steampunk Boba Fett. Steampunk Boba Fett, Mr. John Strangeway, and made fun of our friend for a good hour. It was an interesting time.
So was there a roast of Jabba anywhere?
Not yet. We may have to, like, you know, get that set up for, because I'm local famous. I'm not, like, you know, hugely famous yet. So
hey, we're on a podcast. We have to work on that. We're going international. Okay.
Yeah, we have to work on that for next year. But yeah, the dealer's room was amazing. There was all kind of stuff in there. I did see, you know, we are big game nerds, and there was a lot of tabletop gaming booth there. There's a lot of games that I hadn't even seen before. There was a booth from a company called Geek Chic that made these customized gaming tables that were awesome. I mean, they were like poker tables, but for nerds. I mean, you could get them with built cities if you know, play, like, you know, some kind of miniatures game or stuff with, like, just a, like, I play a lot of X-Wing, and they had one that had a built-in Starfield into the table where you could play your X-Wing on it. It had, like, cup holders and little pull-out shelves to put all your books and cards and accessories on.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds awesome. You know, in fact, like Joe hinted on, we are such tabletop nerds that, you know, I've got a full-size billiard table, 8 feet, down in the basement, and oftentimes that gets converted into a Starfield itself more so than it gets actual billiard play.
Or lately our studio table where we record the podcast.
I mean, hey, there's not too many people that's got an 8-foot desk with, you know, built-in cup holders and everything else, so we're doing it right.
I mean, and if you are a gamer, Dragon Con is a good place to go. They have the one of the hotels, the Hilton. The entire basement level of the Hilton is turned into a giant gaming room. I mean, there was people there 24 hours a day playing Magic or tabletop games or whatever. I did see a game, like, blast from the past that I've not seen in years, called Mech Core. It's a giant mech warrior game, and you get inside these giant pods that are look like big hockey pucks nearly, but once you get inside them, it looks like the cockpit of a giant robot. There's all these readouts and dials with your weapons and your damage, and you have a 10 person death match you know, in this virtual world, and when you're done, there's like a play-by-play printout of how the battle went, and they play like a highlight video of your battle at the end.
And that's pretty awesome. That's everything that I wish MechWarrior on Sega Genesis was. But, you know, unfortunately my living room just isn't big enough for to have an all-out battle of that scope.
And I did see a lot of panels too while I was there. I went to the Warehouse 13 panel, and, you know, got to see the cast of the Warehouse 13. And there was even a furry that dressed up as the dog from Warehouse 13 that they called on stage and was petting like a dog. It was creepy and hilarious at the same time.
So was Slave Leia, would you say, still the most popular female costume? Or
saw a lot of Slave Leias, but now that Guardians of the Galaxy came out, there's a lot of Gamoras running around this year, and a lot of Star-Lords. It was kid Star-Lords, adult Star-Lords. I even saw a couple really good Groot costumes, too. I mean, I was amazed. That movie's not been out, what, a month? And there was these, like, seriously built costumes.
Yeah, dude, Guardians of the Galaxy really took off. I mean, I think we touched on it in a previous episode, but, I mean, that was truly a fun movie to be in. And, you know, Rachel not even being really interested in the whole, you know, comic book stuff or, you know, a lot of the nerd things that we partake in, you know, she held her attention, and, you know, it was a roller coaster for her. So, you know, it was really awesome to see people outside of, you know, some of the nerd sects, you know, get down into the movie the way they have. I mean, it was something that I think, regardless of what facet of life you're in, you could sit down and take something away from the movie and have fun with it.
And that's one of the best things of Dragon Con is the costuming. I mean, I lack the skills to build some of that stuff. That's why I have people like Danny Ashby to build my Jabba persona.
Yeah, anybody that's willing to give sewing machine lessons and creativity advice, we're all ears, folks.
Yeah, even if you don't go to panels and stuff, just walking around, people watching and seeing some of these costumes, and even some like obscure costumes that you don't really see anywhere else. I saw a Max Headroom, if you remember the Max Headroom movie from the 80s. He even had that weird laser background thing mounted behind him. I saw a Lewis Tully from Ghostbusters. He had the colander head scanning helmet thing that they scan his brain with in the first Ghostbusters movie.
So going back to our earlier science segment here, I guess that'd be another way to get human thought channeled into another being.
Some colander with some circuit boards on it. And yeah, they saw a lot of the 501st and the Mandalorian Mercs guys. Went to a couple of their costuming panels and went to some of the voice acting panels too. Met the guy that does the voice of Shao Kahn from Mortal Kombat.
Oh yeah, you get the opportunity to have him tell you how bad you sucked.
Yeah, I tried. He's like, "You suck."
So what would you say was the most interesting highlight of your Dragon Con adventure this year?
I got to meet a lot of, like I said, a lot of fellow podcasters, and you know, get their input on what makes a good show, and seeing the celebrities and stuff. And this is the first time I'd ever gone through the Artist Alley area, where they have a lot of comic book writers and our artists there, and you can see their work. And there's a lot of just custom artists there. There's one guy
on a much grander scale than when we were at an AcroCon.
Yeah, I mean, it was a like the art room down there was just gigantic. And to throw back to our earlier topic of the Evil Dead, they had the artist area, then they had this art show area. And I was going through that, I went by one booth, and somebody had built a Necronomicon, like it from Army of Darkness.
I saw some DIY videos on some folks making that, but I mean, as an owner of a copy of the paperback version and some of the bad luck, I guess you would say, for some folks.
Yeah, I did not touch it. They had a sign up that said, Klaatu Barada Nictu, don't be afraid to open it. And I was like, nope, that's a trap.
That is definitely a trap.
You know, some guy dressed as Amar Akbar walked by and like, it's a trap. So I was like, nope, I'm not. I'll open in the Necronomicon. I do not want to know what happens. Because when you're surrounded by 60,000 nerds, you do not want deadites possessing half the crowd.
I mean, you say it's like a bad thing.
Well, if they do, there's a little secret at Dragon Con no one knows. There's a track called The Armory, where they do panels on historic and modern weapons. And they have a whole display room full of firearms, like machine guns, rocket launchers, ammo. Everything. See, I didn't see any ammo, but that's not saying there's not some hidden in a back corner somewhere. That's like, you know,
that's probably in the cellar of one of the hotels somewhere.
That's Dragon Con's like secret like contingency plan, just in case the zombie apocalypse breaks out during Dragon Con weekend. If you know about it, you can go to the armory and like load up to, you know, prepare for the oncoming battle.
So, I mean, that sounds, you know, pretty awesome there. I mean, any other, you know, key highlights, or, you know, how about this, you know, for folks that have not been to Dragon Con yet, you know, what are some of the areas that you would tell, you know, first timers, or, you know, as far as parking, or, you know, how to handle the massive size?
Probably the hardest part of getting into Dragon Con is finding a room. I mean, the rooms literally have already sold out for next year, and it's only like 2 weeks after the con. But there's a Dragon Con Rooms Facebook page. There's a Live Journal page where people usually post looking for roommates, or people that a year from now can't afford the room and need to sell it for whatever reason. And you can sometimes pick up a room then, or you can get one of the overflow hotels nearby. Parking, I would not recommend, because it's like $20 to $30 a day.
Yeah, I think I looked, you know, when we were talking about, you know, booking our room for next year, and you know, even as a guest of the hotels, most of them were tacking on an additional $30.
Yeah, during that weekend, they jack up the prices on parking. I parked at MARTA station. It was like $5 a day and just rode the train down. And like I said, I had a room once I got down there. But yeah, it was so much cheaper to park. So I'd say drive down there, drop off your gear, then drive your car back somewhere cheaper to park than parking at the host hotel. And then just make sure you get plenty of sleep, plenty of water. You can't not sleep and drink all weekend because you will die.
We every weekend, and we're still here.
Yeah, but we're not like, you know, doing it for 4 days straight.
I mean, dude.
We only do it on podcasting days.
And basically any other day that ends in Y. So, I mean, that about wraps up this segment. Any closing thoughts or anything that you'd like to tell the folks listening?
Closing thoughts. Shout out to our new favorite brand. What's the name of the band?
Oh, yeah. L-Storm. Yeah. You guys haven't checked them out. It is everything Irish pirate metal should be.
Yeah. Steampunk Irish pirate metal. All their songs have to do with drinking. I think it's our new favorite band of the show.
Yeah, we'll do another episode and include some of their clips and stuff and, you know, let you folks at home give it a listen. But, you know, truly, you know, great debauchery and, you know, something I could listen to on a daily basis.
And as always, check us out on our Facebook page, Cigar Nerd Podcast. If you want to send us an email, tell us what we're doing wrong, tell us what we're doing right, give us a suggestion for the show, that's cigarnerdpodcast@gmail.com. Holler at us at Twitter at Cigar Nerd Podcast or at Cigar Nerd Pod, and check out our website cigarnerdpodcast.com.
And we'll sign off here, and we'll see you folks on a future episode.
And as you remember, shop smart, shop as smart. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.